First, it says in our schools, we don't have any place to put up. We made charts and all these things. I think a schoolroom should be, you know, colorful and enjoyable place for children to be. She said we don't have any. They said we don't have any place to put our materials that we made. Okay. The second, they said we don't get paid. Now I thought if you had a teachers' meeting in America, what would be the first thing it would say? I'm not getting paid. You know what they said? Our pay is going to be up there. Our pay is going to be up there. Can you imagine people in America teaching a half a day every day for nothing? Now, granted, they don't have, they're just farmers. I mean, their husbands, most of them are farmers. They're subsistence farmers. But I have to admit, when that meeting was over, I got up and I don't know if they understood it, but I said, this is the Korean way or the Asian way. I says, I honor you. And I honor people like this because they are really committed to what they feel God wants them to do. And what it is, they're doing the school. These schools are sort of like private schools, and the parents are supposed to pay for their children's education. They don't have any money. And so that did that, but that sort of blew me out of the water. The second thing that it said the problem was we're not getting any pay. Okay, next. So, and this is, again, the same language. Luya is the language. These same ones with some of the students in one of their classes after we had the teacher's training was done in churches. Most of these were done in churches. And I stayed in the pastor's house. Okay, next one. No, that doesn't come up very clear. Now this shows what we're doing. We're showing them how to make materials for their for the activities. And what we do is they don't have money for flashcards and stuff, so we take a box. We just take a cart. You can see this. It's just a box like you get at the grocery store. We cut it out and we use chalk. And so they've written three words which would make up a sentence. This is they're practicing what they'll do with the children. So mother fed me. Okay, one's got, and you give them, what you do is you give them the card, you give the students, mother and fed me, and then they've got to put them in order. You don't give them to them in order, so they've got to come up and stand here and mother fed me. And it's interesting, as I did this, you'll see these students, when they first do this, the children don't know, it's new to them. And so the students in the class will say, oh no, you stand over here. And they'll tell the students where they're supposed to stand. And then once they get the picture, they start. But we want to make education interesting. Now another thing is, there are two models of education in many third world countries. I'll better get back to that later. Let's go ahead. I'll get the talk. Okay, now we're going to another language. This is called Ekisuba. And what we do, these languages do not have any books. There are no books in these languages, even though the government says you can teach in them. So what I do is I show them how to make books, and I show them how to make handmade books. And here they're making big books. And we are in the school. This is a very nice school. It had very good desks and things. And this is actually the cafeteria. But what I'm showing them how to make what we call big books, and they'll use these books to show the teachers' children how to read. And this is very inexpensive. I go in and I say, I pay my way here, and I take a little bit of money, maybe $100 for materials, and then that's what they do. Okay, go on. And this is the Ekisuba. These are the teachers that came for this course. Okay, go ahead. This is down around Lake Victoria in Kenya, the beautiful lake, and this is right on the edge of the lake, and right near where the school was. But this is a language that is dying out. It's dying out because they want to revive it. I want to try to help them, but they're losing their language to President Obama's father's language. His father's language is Luo. And Luo is the second largest tribe in Kenya, and they've got a lot of political influence and all. And this Ekisuba is a little place, and so they say, oh, their parents are starting to use Luo with their children. But this is where I was. Okay, go ahead. Then I went to Luo. Now, this is President Obama's father's language. And we were in a church. The church there is both a school and a church. As you'll see the building later. But they'll have the school there. They'll have a couple classes in there on Monday through Friday. And on Sunday, they have church. By the way, I usually, about every Sunday, I was speaking. And I just would do teaching, very basic teaching. A lot of these places, the pastors don't have a lot of training, so the teaching is minimal. Okay, go ahead. Now this is you can see that's the church building in the back. It looks like it's several buildings connected, and this is where they had the teacher training, and so that's why the kids were out. You saw the kids were outside in the when we had classes, and we would show the teachers how to do to teach how to make the big book. We'd show them how to make the books, and then we'd have them go and practice. And because we were using the children's classrooms, the classes are outside. That's why they're out in the open. Okay. Now, one of the places I visited, I stayed at the orphanage because there was no place for me to stay at the school, and someone came and picked me up on a motorcycle or a little motorbike, and I'd go home, go on that every day. And I stayed in this lady that looks after this orphanage. And there's many children who are AIDS orphans, and I don't know what percentage there were here, but this is both an orphanage and a school, and it's an African lady. By the way, I have to add, this lady, she said, her father was very traditional, he was a chief. Her father was a chief. She's about 60 years old. Her father had 10 wives. She says, I don't even know all my half brothers and sisters. There's about 100 of them. Can you imagine that? But in the traditional way of life, chief, you had the more wives you had, the more gardens you had, the more cattle you had. And so then you would have a lot of things to give out. Just like our politicians, you know, they like to come and they promise you this and that. Well, that's how a person became a leader. Had a lot of wives, had a lot of gardens, a lot of things, and then they had a lot of wealth, and then they shared it with other people. A lot of that was interesting. I don't even know all my half-brothers and sisters. I thought my mother had a big family of 14. Imagine 100. Okay. Now we're going to the Kibera, and this is in Nairobi. And I mentioned this is the second largest slum in Africa, maybe in the world, I don't know. 1.25 million people live here. 1.25 million. And this is the entrance into it. And it looks good, and the picture even looks better than what it is. Okay, next one. Here I was teaching in Swahili, which is the national language. I wasn't teaching in Swahili. I was training them to teach in Swahili, which is the national language of Kenya. And we did something there, and it really went over well. I learned something at each place I go. And what we would do is we would take the children, like we would do this with kindergarten students. We would take them outside the classroom, and the teacher would talk about something, get a flower or whatever. And you go back in the classroom, and you have the children say, okay, what did we do? And they say, oh, we saw flowers. So the teacher writes on the board, we went and saw flowers. Okay. What else? One flower was pink. And so she writes this on the board, she. And that's what we call learner-generated material. They don't have any books. And so what we do is we have them, they themselves, the students, say it. And then the teacher writes. Now, this, what do you do with third grade students? We had them to write their own stories. So what we did is, okay, let's, the lady who was the principal of this school, she said, okay, let's try it. So we took some of these third grade students and we had them to write their own stories. We took them outside and we would talk about a flower or whatever it was. And we went back in, instead of the students telling the teacher, and she wrote it, we said, you write. So each of them wrote a story about what they did. And this is a child, By the way, this is inside the church. This is a church school. This is what this child is. Several of the children are reading, and you should. That really impressed the teachers. They'd never seen students do that before. But this child was standing up there reading. It just sort of blew their minds away, because so many schools in places like this are very, very. The students are passive. And especially if it's in a foreign language like English or something, or even Swahili is not their first language. Well, and here they would be, in the slums it might be. But in many places in Kenya, it's not even the first language. Well, the children are just passive, and they just sort of sit there dazed, and or they repeat, you know, this is a book. Whereas we've got the children being active. We call this active, progressive creative phonics. All right, let's go to the next one. And now, they're having lunch. Again, we're having our training session in their classroom, so they brought the desk outside, and they're having their lunch. But in many cases, they say, this is the only lunch, this is the only meal the kids will have. Now, some of them will have three meals a day, but many of those, especially orphans, know, will not have not enough food. And what happens is there are churches in America and Australia and England, other places, will contribute. And they buy basically rice, corn, and beans. Beans, they get their protein, and corn, they will get mixture. And they have something, their main food would be something much like cornmeal mush. They use corn, they call it maize, and they'll grind it up, and they just cook it up, and put it in a bowl, turn a bowl upside down, you put it on the table, and you just take a knife and cut out what you want, and you eat it, and then they have some sort of a sauce with it. Okay, so here are the children having their, and this is the course, there's the church. That's the church school building. And these are the books that they made. And what we would do is we would have them, each one would make one book, each teacher make one book, and then we'd take the text from the other book. Each one made a different book. So then we'd take the text from each book and give it to them, say, now you go back, and during the school year, you make a book each week. And then we also had a little reading. I didn't bring those. These also, we also have little reading sheets we make. So every child should have at least two new stories a week. And this is how they're going to learn to read well. And when, okay, let's go ahead. Now this is going to another. This is Kimeru, which is another language. And I've been there twice. And how I went there is there was a lady from this language group, from this village actually, from Gaitu. She was studying at Florida State. And Dan and Lisa went to Florida State in graduate school for a year back in the late 80s after they graduated from Wheaton. And they met her, and Dan, if he knows someone that's international student, he gets to know them. So they've been a friend with this lady for about 20 years. And she heard what I was doing about 3 years ago, and she says, why don't you go and do this for my people? And so I went there last year, and I went there again this year. And she's going to work here. She's working now teaching in she's got a doctorate degree. She's teaching in a Methodist college down in Florida, a little black African-American college. She teaches Bible there. And then she's going to plan to retire and go back to Kenya. Anyway, they're having their flag-raising ceremony every morning. Okay. And this is the... their assembly. All the children are lined up by grades at the assembly after they had the flag raising. Okay, next one. They had a little traditional dance. This is not the tourist kind, because you can see I've got very modern clothes on, but this was, they were having a fun day, and so they decided to have some traditional dances, but this was it. Okay, next one. And with the fun day, there were some other people from America there, and they brought the ropes, and so they had these different activities for the children, and they were having a great time trying to climb these ropes. Next. Okay, then from there I went to South Sudan, and the Dinka is the largest language in South Sudan, and there's many dialects. There's 4 dialects. The New Testament has been translated into 3 dialects. But South Sudan is the newest country in the world. It became independent on July the 9th. Now, they had decades-long civil war on and off with the North Sudan. North Sudan is Arabic, it's Muslim, and the South is black, African, and it's Christian or pagan. So there was all kinds of conflicts there. And they finally got independence, and they said, we want our language, because before all the education was in Arabic. So they said, now we want our language and English. And so I was there to help them develop materials in their own language, Dinka. And so we had four dialects of Dinka, and here again we're showing them how to make big books. We didn't do any teacher training because this was in the capital city. I couldn't get out to the village areas, the rural areas. And so these were the people, and they would come. These were people working. So all the sessions were from 4 o'clock until 7 o'clock. I'd work during the day, then I'd come and then work from 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock on making materials. Okay, go ahead. And these are the ones who are in it. The fellow in the back that's got the striped, looks like a prison uniform, he's the one who invited me to go there. I met him years ago, not several years ago. By the way, the Dinkas are the tallest people in the world, I think. Someone said, I've got a picture. The guy in the back there, he's about like this. And there's one of them, one of their, played professional basketball for America, about 7'3" or 7'4". Okay, next one. Is that it? Oh, okay. I don't know what happened. I don't have my pictures. I've had some computer trouble, and I don't have my pictures from India and Papua New Guinea, so they just aren't there, so that's all I could do. Okay. Can we show the other part? Maybe I can do that. Is there the one that's in that? I think it was open, wasn't it? It was. Pardon? It's a document file. This is how you say, well, how do you go about doing this? Now, by the way, these workshops, I had about 11 or 12 of them last year. I'm in there for a week. So what would you do? Okay, this is a challenge. You've got 1 week for a workshop, and the government says in Kenya, the government says you can teach your own language 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week. So what would you do if you're some of your teachers? What would you do if you had that allowance? You're supposed to teach the children to read and write in their own language, but you're only allowed one lesson a week, one lesson a day, 5 days a week. I guess you can go about 45 minutes. So what we did is we've come up with what we call a creative phonics lesson plan. So on Monday, I'm going to take you through this. Can you all read that? Okay, you see there, what we do is we have them, we don't start with A, B, C, D, E, F, or A, B, D, E. It doesn't do very much. What we want to do, and this is something we developed in Papua New Guinea, we want to get them reading words as quickly as possible and making sentences as quickly as possible. So, then we've got to find out, well, which are the most productive sounds? Okay, well, we found out. Now, this is Tok Pidgin, which is the trade language of Papua New Guinea. Well, if we start off with and we've got a way to teach them the sounds. I won't go through that, but it's sort of, you teach them, we'll write words on the board. Like I'd say, mama, and I write mama on the board, and I write man on the board. and Mary. All right, Mary on the board. And I said, all right, now you come up with three words that start with that. And so they'll come up with something like moon. So I write moon on the board. And they come up with mountain. I write mountain on the board. Come up with May-May. Write May-May on the board. Okay, then I say, okay. And I read through all those words. They're on the blackboard. And I show them that first letter. And I say, okay, that's mm. That's the mm sound. And I'll write mm out on the blackboard. Do you like that? And I say, okay. Now I'm going to show you how to write that sound. And so I say, okay, and I go into like this. Mmm. I'll do that three times. Mmm. Mmm. Now you do it, okay? And as you do it, you say it, all right? You've got to say it, all right? Let's do it. Mmm. 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 Okay. Now, okay, now you do it on your lap or your desk or if you're on the ground, whatever it is, and they do the same thing. So they will write it mm, and say it. Mm, mm. Okay, that's how we teach a sound. Now, there's method in the madness. Okay, the thing is, they hear, they say, they see, and they do. And psychologically, all these things go together to help you to remember it. We want all of that. And so we'll do that. And so every day, every week, we'll teach them a new sound. Okay? Then we add another. So the second week, we'll add another sound. The ah. Well, now we can spell a word. M-ah, m-ah, mama. And so we have that. And they have to go through. I can't do this. They have to do it. I lead them through that. So I get teachers and get them all together. And they go through and I say, okay, come up with words that you can make sounds that make words in sentences as soon as possible. Now, I know talk pigeon, so I did this myself. But I found out that mm and ah, we got it. And then we had ka. And you can probably read them like ka. Ka is car. Come is come. Mock is mark. And mock is, it's got lots of marks on it. They do duplicate, what I call duplication. They mock, it means it's got more than one mark. A leopard has, we got mock. Ah, a leopard has lots of, yeah, a leopard's one's got all the yeah, panther, I'm getting, yeah, okay. All right, so that's what we would do. And then we add E. And so we've got key, me, mommy, a yam, ami, soldier, kai, eat. Kai means to bite. And kick him is kick. And E by itself, I should have put it up there, E just sort of makes it into a sentence. Okay? So we have the new sound on Monday. To Tuesday, we'll do spelling. And this is how we teach them to spell. I would teach them to spell like this. And this you can do this in any language you go to. Okay? I'm going to say something, and I want you to say it slowly. All right? So I'm going to say a word, and I want you to say it sound by sound, okay? All right, let's start with mama. Mm-ah, huh. Okay, mommy. Mm-ah-mm-e. Okay, come. K-ah-mm. Then what you do that for about five or six, then you say, all right, now, as you do that, take your pencil or your chalk, and as you say it, write it, because they know all these, they've been writing all these letters. So you say, all right, mama, and they're supposed to go, very simple. Now, their spelling is very, very simple compared to ours. English, I just learned something. English has got one of the most difficult languages to learn to spell that there is. Only places like Chinese, but Chinese doesn't have a spelling system. They have pictures or pictographs. And it takes 6 years for them to basically be able to read and write. But in like they say, Italian is the simplest. It's two. Italian is two. If you can say it, you can spell it. And Spanish is maybe like seven or eight. And it gets up, French is about 40-something. English is 67 on the difficulty scale. And so when people are trying to teach children English, well, there's no need for a spelling bee in top prison, because as you can say, you can spell it. So this whole idea of a spelling bee, you go over and tell them, oh, we have spelling bees in America. Well, what in the world is that? They don't understand. Well, all these languages, that where I'm going, most of them are like that. They're phonetic. And you say it, you can spell it. But English, I is I. It's E-Y-E, and you get the I sound is I-G-H, is in night, and it's E-Y-E is in die, and I-E is in die. And you see all these different ways of spelling the same sound. Well, in talk prison, it'd be all I, A-I, I-E, I-E. And so that's why it's easy for these children to learn to read. So then on Wednesday, we teach them words. So we go from sound to spelling a word, and then we teach them to read words. Now we don't want them reading mama. We want them to read it quickly. So what we do is we put two lists. I have the teachers write two lists on the board and say, okay, read them. So we'd start off, and I would have a pointer, but I don't have one. We go mama, come, mommy, kai kai, ami, me, ka, mock. Now I go again, mama, come, mommy, kai kai, ami, me, ka, ma. All right, now you read with me. Read with me, okay? Mama, come, mommy, kai kai, ami, me, ka, ma. Okay, again, we're gonna go a little faster. Mama, come, mommy, kai kai, ami, me, ka, ma. Again. Mama, come, mommy, kai kai, ami, me, ka, ma. Now, what I would do here, and I can't do that, I would switch. I'd just jump all over the place. So I'd start off with maybe mama, go down to ami, and then they can't memorize the order. Then with this, we'd say, okay, we go to the second order, and we do it on the second list. But they're the same words, but they're just in different order. And then we make a game out of it. And we'd have one student come up and say, would you come and take a piece of chalk? Would you come and draw a line between the mama on the left and the mama on the right? And they have to find mama on the right side, and they draw a thing down to it. And so we put eight of those up, and eight children will come and practice do that. So we try to make games for them. There are lots of games that we do. Okay, now, the other thing we do, they're taught phonics. So I've got a new word for them. Can you pronounce that new word there? It says new word there. Can you say it? Miki. All the sounds are E. So E, I sounds E. Okay, they've never had that before, but they can, because they have, they'll go Miki. And so we give them some words that they haven't spelled before, so that they can practice reading words they've never seen before. And as they go and learn more and more, they're going to have more and more, most of the words they've never spelled before. So this is, we're teaching how to. Okay, then Thursday, okay, move up a little bit. On Thursday, we have sentences. Okay, so we teach them sentences. So they're going to read, Mama ikum kai kai. Can you read that? Try to read it with me. Mama e kum kai kai. Ami e kai kai mami. Ka e kum. Okay, and so we get them to, we want them to read those normally. We don't want them to read. And the teacher moves across with this pointer, and they read it naturally. So they're going to say, Mama e kum kai kai. Ami e kai kai mami. Ka e kum. We don't let them read it. Mama, e, kam, kai, kai. No. We want it to be, even if they're reading it slow, they want them to be together. Then we have some exercises for them. We leave the subject out. And they've got to put a word in there. So they can put mama, e, kam, ka, e, kam, ami, e, kam, me, e, kam, anything like that. And then the next one, we'll put the object. Ami, e, kai, kai, I've only got one word so far. It would be yam, mommy. And we leave the verb out. Mama e kai kai, mama e come. And so they need to put in words to make up sentences. And finally, on Friday, we teach them stories. And now this is a story that they can read after 4 weeks. Now most languages aren't quite this simple, but in the fourth week of classes, the children are reading this. And you couldn't do this in English. Any first grade teachers here? Anyone that's ever taught first grade? Could you have children reading a 5-sentence story in 4 weeks? I don't think so. But here's the way it goes. I'll read it to you. Mama e kam, me kam, ami e kam, ami e kiki mama, mi kai kai ami. Okay, this domestic violence. Mother came, I came, the soldier came. The soldier kicked mother, I bit the soldier. Okay, now that's a little story. It's not a very sophisticated story. It's not going to win any prizes. But the thing is, these children are reading, and there's only 4 sounds in that story. Now, the challenge is to get, when I go over to these places, is to get them to make up little stories like that. It's hard. I spent months coming up with this sort of stuff. But the thing is, they're able to do it. And that's what we do. We go in and show them how to do it. And this is the sort of lesson plan I give them. All of them. I say, okay, you have to make up the lesson plan. But Monday you teach a new sound. Tuesday you teach them spell. Wednesday you teach them words. Thursday you make sentences. And they won't have many stories probably for a month or so. But by the time, now like in their alphabets, many of them, they'll have all the letters of the alphabet taught in, say, 16, 18 weeks. And then they can just go, they can write any kind of story. And we have the children. Now, this is what they're reading, but in about the 8th week, we'll have the children writing stories with what sounds that they have. And we have another, okay, that'll be it. One other thing that we do is we have what we call language any teachers may, language experience activity. And the idea is that we want the children to be as active as possible. Now this, one of the problems we have in many former colonial countries like Kenya and India, Nepal, a lot of Africa, Papua New Guinea, is that the education is very, very passive. And the children are not, it's what we call this creative. We call it creative phonics. We're not just teaching them to read. We're wanting them to be creative. And so we have them making up words, making up sentences, making up stories as soon as possible. And what we do, once they have all the sounds of the alphabet, well, we'll do what the teacher, instead of the students going out and the teacher talking about something and coming back into the classroom, the teacher said, okay, what did we do? Writing it on the board. The children write the story. And so we expect children to be writing simple stories in the first grade. And in most cases, they don't even consider that. That's why when this children, I showed you that child was standing up reading something that it had written, third grade, they had never seen this before. I'll give you another story. I went to Quimero, the language area where the lady that's went to Florida State, Dan met. I went over to her place, and I went into a second grade class. I'd already had the training course was over. This was another school. And I went into the second grade class, and all these children, they were going, they could go A, B, C, D. They could write capital letters, small letters. They could say it. They could do it in Swahili. Capital letters, small. Also, they knew the alphabet in 2 languages. They cannot read one word. In 1 hour, I showed the teacher, I said, okay, let's show them how to read. And so their word for, by the way, in many of these languages, I'm finding that mother is mama or ama. And I think theirs is ama. It's got a nasal in it. So I said, okay. And I showed her how to teach them. And within an hour, several of those children were able to read sentences. because they were teaching in their own language. They already knew the alphabet, but no one had ever taught them how to read. And the headmaster afterwards, the principal, he came out afterwards, he sent me, and he says, two of those students came out and said, oh, that's what reading's all about. That's what reading's all about. And so we're making it very easy for them to do that. So so I'm having a ball. I feel guilty. You know, missionaries are supposed to suffer. I've told the people down in Tallahassee where I attend Dan's church, and I says, you know, by the way, this is Tallahassee. It's where Florida State is, and if any of you follow football, you know, it is king down there. And don't mention Florida. University of Florida is arch rivals, you know. But it's sort of like Michigan, Ohio State, I guess. But the, what was I going to say? That's what happens, you get old, you lose your thoughts even as you're speaking. Oh boy, what was I talking about? Pardon? Oh, okay. I said, do you feel that those guys are out there working hard playing for Florida State? Do they enjoy that? I feel what I'm doing is like playing a football game. You get in there and it's hard, but it's worth it. And you see the results and you win a game, it's worth it. And I think they understood. I say, okay, it's not the easiest thing, but it's like playing a football game. And I got some interesting stories. I literally don't, I'll unpack my suitcase when I get back home. But I live out of a suitcase 9 months out of the year. But I've been doing this for so long. It's just sort of the normal life. And like some of the times when I go to these countries, I go to Kenya or in India, I travel. Like when I was in India, I had to travel way up. Now, northeast India, has got this big heart. It's like a heart shape, but there's a little section up there. It looks like an appendix, and it goes way up. And almost surrounds, I didn't realize this, it almost surrounds Bangladesh. I mean, maybe 20, 50 miles, and it would go all the way around Bangladesh. Well, I had to go way up in that corner near Burma, and it takes 12 hours by train or by bus. And let me tell you, and it's usually overnight because, you know, like these long flights. Last year I went on a train. It wasn't too bad. I had a place to sleep. This time I went on a bus. And I was right over the back seat, or back tires, and every time it would hit a bump. So I didn't sleep much that night. But, you know, the worst part of it is the travel, but I enjoy it. Now, another thing that people say, we're doing more than literacy. We're doing multilingual education. I'll give a little bit the idea behind this. Our time is up. Multilingual education is, I'm not against English. I'm not against Swahili. I'm not against this. But I feel, and there's a lot of research that shows you've got to start in the language the children speak. And you'll be surprised how many places. The colonial governments back in the 1800s and 1900s and all, they took their own language. And so in Kenya, they were trying to teach these children English. Now they've learned and they've got universities and all this, but the missionaries didn't. The missionaries were way ahead of the colonial. They were teaching them in their own language. And a lot of these people I've run into in Kenya, they say, oh, we learned in our own language first. And these are people who've gone to university and all. But the idea, it's just horse sense. We would say horse sense. You can't teach children if they can't speak with the teacher. It's communication. And what we do is we say, go in there, start with the children. And I say the first day of class, the children should be active. They should understand what the teacher's saying. They should be able to answer questions. If you're trying to teach them in a foreign language, they don't get anything. And typically I ask people, I say, in Papua New Guinea, I said, when you went to school in English, when we went there, they were all going to school in English. I said, when did you first understand most, not everything, most of what the teacher was saying? And most of them would say, average is around fourth grade. Well, I'd say, what does that mean? That means in the first 4 years of school, they're getting less than half of what the teacher is talking about. We say, go in. From day one, you understand and you teach them. Then what happens is we add, they know how to read and write and count and do all these different things in their own language. Then when they learn English or the other language, they just carry that across. You only learn to read once, by the way. Did you know that? Can you remember? I don't remember it, but there's one time in your life that you say, oh, that sound, that letter, that says, ah. It only happens once. That only happens once. And once you do that, you learn to read. And then that, once you've got that, you just carry that over to another language. You don't have to start over again, and your brain doesn't have to say, oh, over here in this other language, this ah sound is not. No, you just carried across. And so that's why we can teach children to do so much better. We do so much better in their own language, and then they add other languages on it. So we taught Encores in 1981. Shirley, she's a teacher, and basically I helped her start a kindergarten in Encore. That was a new thing over there, fairly new anyways. And these Encore kids are reading very well. They went to English school. The government gave them a school. They didn't have a school. The government gave them a school in 1983. These kids went in. When they took their grade 6 exam to decide who goes to high school, they were the best rural school in the whole province. And that's why I'm convinced that this is what we need to be doing. And I feel that I was a biblical studies major in college at Wheaton. And I just realized, do you know the first Bible translation, I was with the Wycliffe Bible Translation, the first Bible translation was from Hebrew to Greek. And it was 250 years before Christ was born. It's called the Septuagint. But it was written for people who could stand up and they would discuss it in their synagogue. Someone could stand up and read it in Greek in Alexandria, or the Jews were scattered all over that area. But they translate so they could have it in their own language, which was their first language. They'd lost Hebrew. And I think, well, when we're doing translations, we need to have people who can read it and can write it. There's so many other things I like about this. I was interested in science. I started college as a science major. I was back in 56. I was going to be doing a BS, Bachelor of Science in Chemistry. And my idea was to come back and work at the A plant. But God had other plans for me, and I ended up being a Bible translator. But I love science, and so what I do is I go to these different areas, and I teach them things about science. Now, this is something I've just done this year. In Encore, I'd love to take you to Encore, and I think I could take any child. I could take any child from an Encore village, say it's 7 or 8 years old, and say, and ask and say, is Dave here Dabo Hamadamba or Dabo Hamadakwatimba? And he'd say Dabo Hamadamba. He's a vertebrate. Because Dabwa is back, Hamanda is bone, and he has. Amba means he has. So Dabwa, back, bone, Hamanda, Amba, he has. So he's a Dabo Hamadamba. And you can go, and I've taken children, I've shown this to people. I take children and I'd say, okay, is a worm a Dabo Hamadamba? Mm-mm. Is a butterfly? No. Is a snake? Yes. Is a chicken? Yes. Is a cat? Yes. They know how to distinguish between a vertebrate and an invertebrate in their own language. So what we're doing is we're teaching them the concept. And many times when people teach science, they do it the other way around. They start off with invertebrate. They start off with a word. And that's not the way you do. We've done the same thing for mammal, vertebrate, invertebrate, palm tree. All these things that they don't classify together in science, I'm showing them how to do that. And then when they come and they learn English and they go to science classes in English, and they say, this is an invertebrate. Oh, yeah, that's a Dabo Hamadamba. And we do the same. Another thing I do everywhere I go, I say, you've got a flagpole? Yes. And I say, okay, I want you every Monday at the same time, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, every Monday, take a stone and put it where the shadow of that flagpole is. I think it would be good. I would like to see them doing the schools here. Are you familiar how the sun moves back and forth? How many of you know that? A lot of people aren't aware of that. I'm surprised. But I remember when I was playing football up here, I used to trick the guys, and I'd go over and look out here, and oh, it's about 5:15. Because I figured it was about every five minutes the sun would go down. I could see where the sun was going down. I could do that. But it goes from here. And in summer, when Shirley and I used to walk at 9 o'clock, we'd walk around, be walking around low. 9 o'clock is still light, but the sun's over here. It goes back and forth. It goes back and forth. And so what I'm doing is I get the people to do that in there, and what are you going to come up with? If you put a stone where the flagpole shadow is every Monday, what are you going to come up with? You're going to come up with an eight. It's called an azimuth. And I said, well, we can have children observing. Science is just observing what's going on, describing it, and comparing. And we do the same thing with all kinds. We have them writing their histories. I feel we need to get these children good education. Another thing, too, is I feel that in so many places in the world today, if they don't have an education, they don't have a chance. It used to be if they didn't have land. You've got to have land. They had land, but in places in Kenya now, and these people in the slums, when I first went there, I said, why don't these people go back to their home areas? I mean, I would much rather live in a rural area than live in a slum. And some of them said, there's no place to go back to. Kenya has the highest per woman birth rate in the world. It did 8. The average woman in Kenya had 8 children, and there's no land for many people. There's no land to go back to. So the only way that they're going to make a decent living is to have an education. And that's what I feel. So anyway, what are my plans? Please pray for me. I'll be heading off again in April. The plans are this year I'm going to go to Nepal first, because I've always been there during the monsoon when it's raining. I have never seen the Himalayas. They're beautiful mountains, but I've never seen them because it's all cloud. But they wanted me to come during a non-monsoon so I can go into a rural area. I've only just been in Kathmandu. So I'll be going there first, then I'll go to India, Lord willing, then I'll go back to Kenya, South Sudan, Uganda, and then to Papua New Guinea. And I'll be basically doing the same thing, but I won't be going into the rural areas as much. I'll be more training the trainers. So I take the people who have been in these courses before, take the ones who are committed, and we'll train them to, we want to get into making, they're going to have to make books so they can do more and more reading. You learn to read by reading. And these children are learning to read quickly, so they've got to have lots of stuff to read. Another thing we do is, I've concluded that many times our education in these countries are what we call printed book dependent. And they say, well, we don't have any books. And I say, well, that's okay, we're going to make the books. And so the way we show them is they hand make the books. But they do have to have books eventually. Another thing is they're picture dependent. You ever look at your children's book, how many is it pictures? Well, we say we can't afford that. We can't afford books. For pictures. So what we do, we just turn it around. You ever seen it? You have a picture of a woman, and they'll have mama. Well, we just do it the other way around. We teach the children to spell mama. They go, m-ah. And so they write, m-ah. Now you draw a picture of mama. So we just turn the picture thing around. Instead of having a book with a printed picture, they spell the word mother, mama, they write it down, and they draw the picture. And we'll do the same thing, they'll draw a sentence. Mother is eating. Okay, well then they're supposed to draw a picture of mother eating. But eventually we're going to, and this year I'll be training them, they've asked me, I'm listening, they say they'd like me to show them how to make simple education materials on the computer. So I'll be training trainers. Yeah, I should stop. I could go on, keep going on. But the it's interesting to see, to me, the thrill comes when you see these people, these teachers, you know, lighting up and realizing, hey, this is good. I got an email. I may have shared this last year. I got an email from the fellow from Kimetter, the lady that sent from Florida State that sent us, and I went over there. This is a Christian school. I mean, it's a government school, but it's run by the church over there. And there's two kinds of Methodists. There's the English Methodist and American Methodist. Well, this is the English Methodist. They're very self-reliant. And he sent me an email about 6 weeks after I left, and he said, the teachers are enjoying teaching, and the students are enjoying learning. And that's the way it should be. That's the way it should be. Because can you imagine how hard it would be to try to teach in a language, or try to be teaching children English where they didn't speak it? Well, now the children were communicating with the teacher and they were enjoying it. So that's my reward. I get so much from that. And in many of these cases, they have the New Testament already, and we're going to have them reading. I didn't even get to Papua New Guinea. The Lord has opened up. I was able to teach in the teacher's college twice. And next year, they want me to maybe go and do a regular course in the teacher's college. And also, it looks like in Kenya, I'll be able to put some of these things into the teacher's college. I'm just teaching 18 teachers from maybe 9 schools. But if you get in a teacher's college, I mean, something like Luo, they may have 1,000 schools. I'm just a drop in the bucket. But we get them in the teacher's college, and we can go a lot further. Okay, I think I'll stop, and if you want to stay around, ask questions.